From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Florida's death penalty laws have seen major changes in the last few years. As of just last week, a unanimous jury is now required to sentence a person to death. But what do these changes mean for the nearly 400 people already on Florida's death row? We'll talk to Southwest Florida State Attorney Stephen Russell about the local impact of these changes and talk with experts about what it means for lawyers dealing with capital cases in Florida. Plus, firefighters are exposed to danger every day on the job, but not all of those dangers come from the flames themselves. A recent study found firefighters have higher rates of certain types of cancers, but cancer-stricken Florida firefighters have to prove their cancer was caused by exposure on the job to qualify for workers' compensation. We'll talk with local fire officials about efforts behind a new bill to change that and discuss some of the hidden dangers firefighters face every day. First, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. In the past 15 years, cancer has become the leading cause of death among firefighters, not the flames or other more obvious dangers. But in Florida, if a firefighter is diagnosed with any of the rare cancers that have become associated with fighting smoke and flame, it isn't acknowledged to have been caused on the job until the firefighter proves otherwise. A bill is before the legislature right now, hoping to change that, and we'll talk with the North Naples firefighter who is leading that charge a little later in the show. But first, Florida's death penalty has been transformed in the last 2 years by Supreme Court challenges, legislative remedies, and more. Earlier this month, Governor Rick Scott signed a law that promises to fix the death penalty by requiring a unanimous jury to sentence a person to death. But what has months of uncertainty done to death penalty cases in Florida? And will the new laws change sentences handed down in the past? Here to talk us through any changes to death penalty cases in the region is Stephen Russell, the state attorney for the 20th Judicial Circuit of Florida. That's the southwest portion of the state, including Charlotte, Collier, Glades, Hendry, and Lee counties. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
And joining us by phone is Karen Gottlieb, the co-director of the Florida Center for Capital Representation. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
The death penalty in Florida, how it's changed and where it stands now for the nearly 400 prisoners that are on death row. What questions or comments do you have about capital punishment in our state? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, State Attorney Steve Russell, the death penalty laws have been upended in the last few years, and our listeners may only know the headlines that the U.S. Supreme Court declared Florida's death penalty sentencing practices unconstitutional in 2016. A law was passed, and then the state Supreme Court struck that down. Can you kind of give us a Cliff's Notes version and walk us through what's happened in the last couple of years?
Well, generally, the U.S. Supreme Court in the Hearst case, a Florida case, determined that factors that would enhance a sentence, and in death penalty cases, what we call aggravating factors, must be found by a jury and not a judge. So that was one. And on the follow-up to that case, the Florida Supreme Court determined that the current procedure for death penalty requiring a majority was unconstitutional under Florida and law, and that we now have to have those findings unanimous by a jury, and that was reflected in the recent law passed by the legislature and signed into law recently by the governor. And not only the findings, but the recommendation ultimate finding whether death penalty is appropriate would have to be unanimous. That's a quick summary. There are other cases that have been litigated in that area along with it.
So before a judge would decide that the death penalty would be the sentence, and then a simple majority of jurors would make that decision?
Well, under the prior procedure, it could have been a 7-5 recommendation, and then ultimately the judge made certain findings. That has been changed by these rulings and the statute.
And now it's just a simple a unanimous jury has to make these decisions.
Yeah, a unanimous jury as to the existence of aggravating factors and other factors, including the ultimate decision whether death is appropriate in the case. And then it would go to a judge who could not overrule a jury who recommended or decided life, but could overrule a death penalty and still make it life.
Okay. So there was an uncertainty as this was going on. What kind of impact did that have on ongoing death sentence or potential death sentence cases?
Well, essentially, it put most of them on hold. Different jurisdictions and different courts had taken different stances, whether to proceed or put them on hold. But I think the vast majority, it slowed – well, basically brought it to a halt over the last year or so until some of these clarifications were made through statute and by the court ruling. So it certainly brought the progression of a death penalty to a halt by and large, not every jurisdiction but most.
So are
I could add a point, Julie?
Yes. This is Karen Gottlieb. I just want to introduce you. This is Karen Gottlieb with the Florida Center for Capital Representation. Sorry, go ahead, Karen.
Well, I'd like to put the death penalty or the Florida death penalty in context. We reenacted the death penalty in 1972 after the U.S. Supreme Court held it unconstitutional in terms of the procedure. We were actually the first state to reenact the death penalty. And what our statute has provided up until last year was that Stephen says, just a simple majority was necessary for either for a death recommendation. But even if a jury unanimously recommended life, for example, a judge could still give a death sentence. And in fact, another example, Buford White actually was executed where his jury, by a 12-0 vote, recommended a life sentence. So for the first 20 or so years, Florida judges were relatively routinely overruling jury life recommendations. Then we go to death recommendations, and you only need a simple majority. Up until last year, you only needed a simple majority for it to be a death recommendation. It could still be overruled if it was life. It still could be overruled if it was death. It was just a recommendation. And the problem was that the jury's recommendation didn't tell the judge what they found. It didn't tell the judge, we found certain aggravating circumstances, we found certain mitigating circumstances. So there was no way to know what the jury was basing its recommendation on in terms of how much a judge could really rely on it and whether a judge could make the same findings or was required to make the same findings. Now, of course, the judge is required to make the same findings in aggravation as the jury. He is or she is now restricted to what the jury actually finds. And for the first time, we have transparency. We know the findings that the jury is making. We did not, you know, ever before. And also, to put it in context, the death penalty was the only time in the Florida jury system that a majority vote ruled. In other words, every other court case required always a unanimous jury.
Yeah, I know through pop culture that unanimous jury kind of thing always sticks out. So I was kind of surprised to hear about just a simple majority and then even a supermajority of 10 to 2, which was what kind of put things a little bit in limbo, I suppose, in the last year or so. But now, at this point, it is a unanimous jury that is required in order for a death penalty to be the sentence for a person. So I wanted to ask you, Steve, what is that going to mean for things moving forward?
Well, in the 20th Judicial Circuit, where I'm state attorney, we have the five counties. We have gone through those cases that we believe will be affected. First of all, those that we feel will clearly need a resentencing trial with a jury. We have four of those cases. We have another case that is in the timeline that will be reconsidered where there was a unanimous jury, which is subject to an argument of whether it was harmless error or not. And then there's the other sixth case where the defendant waived the jury for the sentencing and was sentenced to death, and that will be, I'm sure, litigated. But those are the cases we feel will be affected where we have to do a resentencing trial. We have 12 other cases that are prior to the date that the Florida Supreme Court said the new rules will apply, prior to a 2001 date that they set. And then we have 8 other cases that are newer cases that where we have announced that we are seeking a death penalty, but we haven't been to a guilt phase trial yet, let alone a sentencing.
Do you think this will have any impact on a state's attorney's decision to go forward seeking a death penalty?
Well, it will have impact just in terms of not seeking so much, but obviously we're going to follow the new law that we would always do. We have in our circuit, I have set up a death penalty review committee of experienced prosecutors from all 5 counties, our most senior prosecutors, to review and discuss and debate the facts of any first-degree murder as to whether or not it's appropriate to seek it, based on the public policy which is put into the statute by the legislature. So we have that process. I ultimately make that decision. I've sought my first death penalty case in 1978. I've had several, a few on death row currently. I've been to an execution. I've looked at all aspects of this so that I, as state attorney, understand all the ramifications as best I can.
So, Karen Gottlieb, with the Florida Center for Capital Representation, I wanted to ask you, what statewide, we have almost 400 people on death row. What do you see happening with this going forward?
Well, as Stephen mentioned, it's hard to know exactly how many will be entitled to resentencing. We expect a lot of litigation in terms of the unanimous jury recommendations, and the jury waiver cases. Whether those individuals will be entitled to a resentencing, we believe they will. But we have, according to the Attorney General, we have roughly 200 that are entitled to a jury resentencing. If you just look at the cost, a conservative estimate is that it's going to run about $250,000 for those hearings. What do you think, Stephen? Does that sound reasonable?
Well, I've over the course of my 40 years of prosecution, I've heard all kinds of cost figures. It's hard to know. Obviously, we're in a system where we're working anyway, so some of them are just salaries. There's certainly a significant cost. It is no doubt the most litigated crime anywhere, or certainly in Florida. And probably the most litigated case. So there's a substantial cost. As a judge told me early in my career, later was the chief judge on the Second District Court of Appeal, it's hard to put a price on justice.
Yeah.
Right. So but if we were going to talk about what it'll cost taxpayers, we're looking at a minimum of $50 million for just the resentencing. That's not taking into account any of the cases that have been waiting for a new statute and any new case that's, you know, pending pretrial.
We are talking about Florida's death penalty and how it's been changed by court challenges and new laws and where it stands today. If you'd like to, you can ask your questions of our experts, Karen Gottlieb with the Florida Center for Capital Representation, and also State Attorney Steve Russell. You can give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we are at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Historically, death sentences, you know, they came down from judges, juries with a simple majority, then a supermajority, and most recently changed to unanimous. We have almost 400 people in Florida death row now. Karen, do you know how many of these people were sentenced by a judge, how many were sentenced by a simple majority jury, and how many were sentenced by a supermajority, a 10-2 split?
Well, almost no one was sentenced under the statute, the 2016 statute that changed from majority to the 10-2. Everyone was waiting for the Florida Supreme Court's decision, which came out in October of last year. So it's hard to break down the exact numbers. It looks like roughly three quarters are going to be well, even perhaps a little bit more, will be less than a unanimous jury.
Okay, so you're looking at three-quarters are less than a unanimous jury that are currently sitting on death row.
A little bit more.
A little bit more. Okay, so State's Attorney Steve Russell, you've been State's Attorney here since 2002. What capital cases do you see coming up? You said you had four probably locally that would probably be lumped into this eligible for resentencing?
Well, yes. Two of them I handled along with co-counsel from my office, but I was lead counsel on. They were co-defendants in a prison, state prison murder in Charlotte County, Dwight Eglin and Stephen Smith. Those two individuals were sentenced in 2006. They were not unanimous. They were both serving life sentences for prior first-degree murders. One had murdered an 80-year-old woman by putting a screwdriver through her in Broward County, and the other one was involved in Pinellas County in a prior murder. One of them was serving six life sentences, three of consecutive. They decided they were going to try to escape, and they bludgeoned to death a female correctional officer, first female correctional officer murdered. Unfortunately, there's been one since. They will have to be resentenced. Their recommendation was not unanimous. So those are two, and they were certainly cases with great impact in Charlotte County and in our area.
So in that particular case, are you going to have to get a whole new jury together?
Yeah, we anticipate we'll have to get a new jury together and go through the process according to the current law.
So, I mean, how do you do that? Do you retry them or do you show them highlights from the last trial?
Well, some of those procedures obviously will be weighed out. Generally, you have transcripts or evidence or sometimes audio, video recordings that may be pertinent to the issues in a penalty phase. So certainly some of the evidence, I believe, in most cases that are going to need to be go through this new procedure will rely on guilt phase evidence from the prior trials. And then there may be certainly other evidence provided both by the state and the defense in mitigation from the defense.
Do you anticipate any kind of testimony happening during these types of retries?
Well, I would anticipate that there will be some testimony.
Yeah, the defense attorneys may ask that, I guess. Well, I guess it would be a defender, correct? That would be working with these people?
Well, generally, I think you tend to get in the sentencing phase more testimony from the defense in that penalty phase proceeding because most of the state's evidence that would purport to support aggravating factors is often done in the guilt phase.
Okay. So, Karen Gottlieb, what happens with these people that are sitting on death row now? They did not have a unanimous jury sentence them to be there. Are these people now reaching out for representation to try to have their sentencing redone, or are attorneys approaching them, looking at cases and trying to figure out what they think might fly or might not?
Well, a large proportion of the inmates do have attorneys. We do have the capital collateral representation offices. For some time, the North District did not have what they call CCR office. And unfortunately, death row inmates from that region have had trouble with representation. The South and the Middle, less so. I guess really the lawyers are in touch with their clients, and I think it's fair to say that almost everyone on death row is aware of the Hearst decision.
Mm-hmm. So another local case that comes to mind, Stephen Russell, that I think people talk about a lot or they remember pretty clearly because it was fairly recent, was the Kevin Foster. He was part of the Lords of Chaos group. He was convicted. He's sitting on death row now. Do you see that one coming back up?
Not on this issue. He was prior to the 2001 date that the Florida Supreme Court said these new procedures would apply to. There are 12 cases that are prior where someone's been sentenced to death, going all the way back to Harold Lucas from a 1976 Bonita Springs murder. He's been on death row since that time. I watched that trial the first year I was a prosecutor. But Kevin Foster and the Lords of Chaos would be prior to that. Joshua Nelson was a 12-0 that I prosecuted of a brutal murder in Lee County. And the other one that people might be interested, Brandy Jennings, was what was known in Naples as the Cracker Barrel murders, where a couple of individuals were murdered in a freezer area of a Cracker Barrel. Those cases and several others are prior to the date that the Florida Supreme Court said these new procedures would apply.
Okay. So death penalties are making the headlines in a lot of other ways this week. Orlando area State Attorney Aramis Ayala was removed from a capital case by Governor Scott for refusing to pursue the death penalty. Then lawmakers in Tallahassee have moved quickly to propose a $1.3 million budget cut that would cost as many as 21 jobs in her office. And today there was a rally planned on the steps of the Capitol in support of Ayala. So I wanted to ask, you know, this is big news this week. Stephen Russell, as a state attorney, how do you feel about Ayala's decision and then the response from Governor Scott and lawmakers?
Well, I and the 18 other state attorneys other than Ms. Ayala, who I haven't met personally yet, all agreed that we felt it was inappropriate. We take an oath to uphold the law through the statutes and the Constitution. It's the legislator's prerogative to set the public policy through the laws of state. We don't have the prerogative to make the law. We have to enforce the law. I think the way Ms. Ayala, and I watched her press conference, she was saying she is not going to apply that area of the law with public policy generally. So I thought it was appropriate that the governor, who has the suspension power under Section 7 of Article 4 of the Florida Constitution to issue an executive order and suspend someone from office, any state officer, for among other things, malfeasance, misfeasance, neglect of duty, incompetence, permanent inability to perform the official duties. Her statement was not that I'm only going to do it in one case, but all cases. And many of us felt that that was a dereliction of duty. Even if I disagree with the law, my obligation is to follow it. The way to change it is to go to the legislature and convince them to change it. There's a legislative process to do that. So we felt, the rest of us felt firmly, that we would continue to consider cases. They have to be considered on their own facts and circumstances to make that decision in accordance with the process. There are certainly cases where we decide it is inappropriate to seek a death penalty, and we will continue to follow that process. Certainly I will in the 20th Circuit.
So you and other states – how many states' attorneys are there in Florida?
20.
20. So you and everybody else kind of feel the same way?
Well, we had a meeting the day after her announcement and issued a statement to that effect that we, the rest of us, were going to follow all the laws of the state, and we felt it was our duty to do that. We take an oath when we get elected. We accept the fact that whether we like laws or not personally, we have an obligation to follow the laws. There's a separation of power. And for me to decide I'm not going to pursue prosecutions of burglaries because I don't like burglaries or something would be inappropriate.
So is there a law saying that what are the circumstances that would drive a state prosecutor to go for the death penalty, to seek the death penalty? Is that lined out in law?
Yes. There's a statute that indicates what aggravating factors are appropriate to consider, and then you have to consider those in the context of all the evidence as to what there might be mitigating, at least that you can envision at that point in time, and whether or not this is one of, as often said, one of the worst cases, those kinds of issues. There are many, many first-degree murders that state attorneys do not seek a death penalty on because they're inappropriate in their opinion after you go through that weighing process up front and then as things develop through the course of the case.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to ask Karen Gottlieb, I wanted to get your feeling on Ayala's position and how much independence should a prosecutor have when it comes to seeking the death penalty?
Well, I think you just hit the nail. I think the prosecutor's independence is critical, and I frankly think that the governor has overstepped in this case. And I think it's really a dangerous, or as they say, a slippery slope when a governor can basically tell a local prosecutor, a prosecutor that has to reside in the circuit that they represent, has to be elected by the circuit they represent, if there's a problem with an exercise of discretion. And we all agree that the decision to seek the death penalty is based on a prosecutor's discretion. We don't have a mandatory death penalty. And one of the difficulties is that, you know, initially the legislature passed a death penalty statute that had 8 statutory aggravating factors. But what has happened over the years is that actually those aggravating circumstances have doubled. So instead of having 8, we now have 16. And as a result, it's almost impossible to find a murder case that doesn't qualify for the death penalty. And what has happened in Florida is that you have a few counties that are responsible for most of the sentences. If we look at race of the victim, race of the defendant, we find that the African-American victim is not given the same consideration as a white victim, and the African-American defendant is certainly not given the same consideration as a white defendant. And in fact, in terms of execution, Florida has yet to ever execute a white person for executing an African-American. So there is a very sordid racial discrimination history in our state. And when you look nationally...
Can you tell me what numbers, what percent of people that are executed in Florida are of color and what percent are white?
Okay, so... let's see, 72% of all executions between 1976 and 2014. This is a study done by Frank Baumgartner of University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, a 2016 research that he did. Out of 72% of all executions, white victims, despite the fact that 56% of all homicide victims are white, 72% of all executions involved white victims.
What I'm talking about is the actual people that are executed. That's what I was looking for, not who the victims were in the case of the crimes I'm talking. I thought you were going there with black people being prosecuted and given death sentences more frequently,
sure.
I think is what you were saying.
Sure. Victims, there were 103 white victims, 24 black victims. There's also a problem in terms of gender, 82 male victims, 61 female victims.
No, I'm not talking... You mean victims of what, the death penalty?
No. I'm talking about executions. I thought you wanted to know, in terms of executions, what the breakdown was of the race and gender of the victims.
No, I'm curious about the race, not the gender. You were talking about race. I just wanted to get the race of the people who actually have been executed in Florida. Do you have that?
Okay. Let's see.
I'm sorry, because you were...
Yes,
kind of, you were,
I do.
Okay.
I do. There were... trying to read these charts.
Okay.
It's victim characteristics.
So I just wanted to, if we're going to talk about race and stuff, I just wanted to make sure that we had our numbers out there before we said that more African Americans are being given the death penalty, and rather, and so that's what I just wanted to get some clarification on. But if we don't have that, we can, we all have Google, we can all look that up. But I just that was the situation about attorney state attorney Aramis Ayala. So I want to move on from there and just ask a little bit about the aggravating factors. Attorney Russell, could you tell me those aggravating factors? There were 8, and apparently she's mentioning that it went up to 16. What are those?
Well, over the course of 25 years, there have been some added, like a police officer. But what was not mentioned was mitigating circumstances used to be set out. Now you can argue anything is mitigating. You know, people had a bad day, were in an auto accident 20 years ago. Mitigating is unlimited on the defense side. Aggravating are set out in the statute. They are enumerated. For example, defendant knowingly created a great risk of death to many persons if there was a nightclub-type situation. Was the felony for which he's sentenced especially heinous, atrocious, and cruel, especially, not just heinous, atrocious, cruel, that the victim of a capital felony was a person less than 12 years of age. And so on.
Some of those kind of sound like judgment calls.
Well, sentencing is a judgment call. That's why we argued, and I don't want to relitigate it. It's settled now, and we accept the new law. But sentencing is a judgment. That's why we have judges do sentencing normally, not juries. Mm-hmm. Some states do. But, you know, there's an emotional aspect to it as opposed to what are the facts, what are the law, trying to be as objective as possible. And I'm not going to re-litigate that. It has been argued. So those are the aggravating factors. In terms of just a quick, I could tell you the 24 pending cases we have either already sentenced or we are seeking a sentence. I don't think we have more than 2 people of color out of 24 in my circuit. Mm-hmm. The other thing is they're all men, and I don't think because they're all men, that means we're prejudiced against men or for women. It depends where it occurs, and there's a lot of socioeconomic factors as to where crime occurs. And there's certainly, you know, those are legitimate issues, but I think they're legislative issues that people are who are opposed to the
victims in those cases, those 14?
I don't have them all. Most of them are white males. I'm looking at the list, but the vast majority of them, the victims are white males. I don't really – can't think of one where it's a white male against a black individual or a Hispanic individual.
Or a female.
At least in this circuit. I'm not trying to, answer for all the other circuits.
Yeah. Well, we have come up against time, so we're going to have to leave it there for now. But I do want to thank our guests, Karen Gottlieb with the Florida Center for Capital Representation. I really appreciate your time and joining us on the phone. And also State Attorney Steve Russell. Thank you so much for coming in and talking with us today and helping make sense of this new law. Thanks for being here. We have numerous links on our website, wgcunews.org/Gulf Coast Live, if you would like to do any further reading and discussion about these death penalty laws in Florida. Coming up, firefighters are fighting at the state capitol this session for acknowledgement that their occupation can cause cancer and that the onus of proving that should not rest on the individual firefighter's shoulders. We'll talk about that bill and look at the staggering spike in cancer deaths among firefighters across the country next.